you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Hawk Talk Podcast. I'm Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago. It is brought to you by our Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Joining me on this week's Hawk Talk Podcast, Steve Conroy and Jamal Mayers. Guys, the Blackhawks had their exit interviews on Monday. We carried those live on NBC Sports Chicago. Nothing too earth-shattering. I think the big news came last week when John McDonough said that both Stan and Joel will keep their jobs going forward. So let's delve into what was actually said on the press conference day. And the biggest thing I took away from Joel Quenneville is how this team needs to get better defensively. What did you hear from Joel, and how can they achieve that?
Yeah, I think his words were, our defensive game is not where we want it. I remember talking to him on the road a couple of weeks ago, and he said, hey, listen, they were exposed at times. And it was surprising because, believe it or not, this team over the first 20 games wasn't that bad defensively. I thought the defensemen playing very well, whether it was Gustav Forsling or Jan Ruda, who I think, you know, started with a real flourish. They were two really surprise players on the Chicago Blackhawks. But after about the halfway part point of the season, I think the grind of the NHL started to catch up with them. And we saw that Gustav Forsling was sent to the minors. Jan Ruda was a healthy scratch. He was injured at times. So they didn't certainly finish the way they started. But I think what Joel Quenneville would like to see is, you know, the defensive part of the game tightening up, and then that obviously leads to more offense. And, you know, if you're good in your own end, you're going to be spending more time in the opposition end. And then when you're better offensively, you don't have to worry about the defensive aspect as much. But, you know, how do you get better defensively? I think they're going to have to add somebody. And it's going to have to be a top four type of defenseman, a guy who can play on the power play, who kills penalties, who's used to lots of minutes. And those guys are tough to find. They're hard to come by. Everyone's looking for a guy like that. You can also do it through a free agent route as far as college ranks go, because the New Jersey Devils grabbed Will Butcher this offseason, last offseason, and he was a big part of their plan this year. He was a great power play guy, a top three guy in their minutes. And all of a sudden, the New Jersey Devils, who were on the outside looking in last year in the playoffs, are in the playoffs. So it's definitely possible. But I think, you know, the biggest need for the Blackhawks going forward right now, need number one, is to pull in another defenseman who can play top 4 minutes.
And for me, Joel oftentimes talks about predictability. And predictability requires trust. And when you don't trust each other defensively, it affects every fabric of your game. Whether it's defense to offense, if you don't trust your partner, you're not going to jump up in the play. In today's game, you have to activate the D. Well, the D are going to be a little bit more cognizant and aware that they can't jump up in the play, and that protects everything. So for me, Joel talks about defending. He talks about their team structure and how it wasn't where it needed to be. That predictability on defense comes with trust. They have to get back to playing good team defense. Yes, they do have to move some parts around defensively to figure out who's going to be there. There was way too many partners, and I know Joel likes to stick with the same partners. He wasn't able to do that this year because the partners in the defensive side of the game were, because of injuries and because of performance, were not at the standard that it has to be.
All right, so let's assume that Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, with committed training and, let's say, diminished role going forward and diminished, say, expectations, that they can get back to a level that we're comfortable watching on a regular basis. It's the rest of the defensive core, the Connor Murphys, the Jan Rutas, the Blake Hillman, I know small sample size, but Erik Gustafsson, Jordan Osterley, maybe a Gustav Forsling is a part of the equation next year. Of that group, who do you see emerging as the front runner to have a top four role, if you think any of those guys
are capable of that.
Well, I do. I guess we should probably throw, you know, Henry Jokiharju in there, and I know that he just finished another year of the Portland Winterhawks, a very strong year. He could take that next step, and you've seen younger and younger guys, especially on the back end, being able to step into the NHL and make an impression. And I looked at the Colorado Avalanche; they traded for him, but Sam Gagliardi is a guy who was part of the Nashville Predators at the beginning of the year. They were thinking of sending him back to the minors. They shipped him off in the deal that got them Kyle Turris. But I think of those guys you mentioned. I was really happy with the way Forsling was playing along with Jan Ruda early last year. And I thought he was maybe the answer to their prayers, a guy who could, you know, kill some penalties, get some power play time. I think sending him to the minors was probably the right thing, just to get him the minutes, to get him a little more experience. I think he's going to take another step. Now, is it going to be a top two defenseman step? I don't think so. I don't think he's going to be able to do that. I think what Stan Bowman's going to have to do is probably look outside the organization to bring in a guy to fill that role. But, you know, as far as the other guys go, Jan Ruda I was happy with. I could see him as a very capable 5-6 guy along with Forsling.
And Gustafson, you liked him on the power play a little?
Yeah. Eric Gustafson was basically their quarterback in the power play over the last 3 weeks of the season. So they've got obviously, you know, plans for him. I don't think he's the kind of guy that's going to log a lot of minutes, because I don't think he's a great penalty killer, but he's certainly a guy that can run a power play, and that's where they had him.
Yeah, for me, it's Eric Gustafson. I think he's shown the most potential for me to jump into that top four position. He has the offensive side of things. He's a strong enough kid, and he's a coachable kid enough to understand that he has to improve defensively and be harder to play against. I think Osterley maybe took a step back as the season progressed, and he really showed his weakness as far as defending the front of the net. Certainly he can jump up in the play and has great wheels and has the offensive instincts, but defensively certainly had his limitations, and that will affect and prohibit him, in my opinion, from taking that top four role. But I think Gustafson has the ability to do both. He can defend and he can be a part of the offense, and as he grows, now that he's 25 years old, he's a guy who signed an extension, has that security that the contract will give you. I think you can see him gaining confidence and stepping into a larger role next season.
You know, as we look at these defensemen, they're in their prime. It's not like these guys are 21 years of age. These guys are 25, 26, 27 years of age. So, you know, maybe what we're seeing is what they are. And my concern is, from a defensive standpoint, being adept in front of the net to tie up sticks, having the body type to push a bigger forward, especially in the Central Division, out of the paint or get in their way, the willingness to block shots. I thought in this group there were deficiencies too many times from all of those guys in the defending area, and I don't know if that's something that you can improve in, or you are the player you are. I mean, where do you stand on that?
Well, they have to improve in that area. And there was a telling stat a couple of weeks ago. Washington Post did a real good piece on, you know, scoring chances from dangerous areas, and that's in the slot. And the Blackhawks were among the top five teams, you know, worst in that area. That means that the opposition was getting real good looks from in front of the net. So, you know, I think that's an area that Connor Murphy can probably improve on too. He's, you know, one of the more physical guys back there, along with Brent Seabrook. But I think that, you know, I'd like to see him take a little more active role defensively in front of his own net. They call it the house, you know, that area about 25 feet radius out from the blue paint. So he can help in that area. And again, if they bring in a top four guy, a guy who can play on both sides of the puck, who's a good puck mover, power play guy, and a penalty killer, that should help. But that was certainly an area. And the Blackhawks, they gave up more shots this year than they did last year, but they gave up more shots in those key areas, and that's certainly an area they've got to tighten up in.
Yeah, they've got to find a way. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Connor Murphy's got to be better. I think that, you know, we can give him a pass perhaps in the first half of the season as far as making the adjustment. He's got to understand in today's game you can't take a linear path and hit people in the neutral zone. It just doesn't work. Teams activate another layer behind you. You're going to, you know, even if you are eliminating a player, you're creating a hole and you're going to hurt yourself on the rush. He has to improve reading plays on the rush. He has to improve and be harder to play against in front of his own net. He has to find a way to block more shots. He has to improve in a ton of different areas, moving the puck out of his own zone as well. So, again, I feel like they're going to have to make some changes. I don't know what that means. Maybe giving up a younger forward, because you don't – these defensemen, these top four defensemen,
yeah,
don't grow on trees.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to give up something to get a guy like that you're suggesting, Steve. So at what cost? I'm not quite certain, but certainly you're going to have guys return to form defensively. As a group, they have to get better, and a lot of that's going to have to do with changing the personnel.
All right, let's flip to the offensive side and forwards. You know, we heard from both Brandon Saad and Jonathan Toews on Monday, and, you know, reuniting those guys did not pay off from a statistical standpoint. So going forward, we'll see if those two are start the season together next year on the same line. But the Brandon Saad, it seems to be pretty simple. He needs to get back to the north-south, the inside-the-dot mentality to his game, maybe add some more speed to his game, as you mentioned in our post-game wrap, Steve. And from Jonathan's perspective, I think it's the answer is a little more complex.
Well, it is, because let's go back to the beginning of the year. It was like all our prayers would be answered. Brandon Saad had 6 goals in his first 6 games, and he was lighting it up with Jonathan Toews. And, you know, the band was back together, and everyone was happy. It went south in a hurry, and in fact, he really struggled for, I'd say, about 3/4 of the year. So, you know, some of the things you hit on, Pat, yeah, the north-south game, that was evident early, not as evident in the middle, and then he put it back in his repertoire later. He's a hard guy to defend because he's got pretty good size. He's a great skater, and he gets a stride on you. He's really good at protecting the puck. He's got to get back to that, and he's got to get back to scoring those goals in front of the net. And you're going to get hacked and whacked, but that's, you know, you got to pay that price if you're going to score. You know, Johnny, I think sometimes he wears the weight of the world on his shoulders, and if things aren't going well for whether it's him, whether it's the team, whether it's other individuals, he carries that responsibility. And I think he's got to, you know, maybe get away from that and not be afraid to make mistakes on the ice, because, you know, early in the season, he was not trying guys one-on-one. He was towards the end of the year. Now, whether he was getting faster, I'm not sure, but I know that early this year, he was deferring to pass, to dump it in, to do anything but to try a guy in a one-on-one situation. I'd like to see him get back to that. And that was a younger Jonathan Toews, would always try guys one-on-one. I'd like to see him getting back to doing a little more of that. And I'd like to see these guys back together again next year. This year, it didn't work out the way they had planned. It did early. It didn't stay that way. But they do have some chemistry. They've obviously won a couple of Stanley Cups together. Brandon Saad is a proven playoff performer. Unfortunately, they didn't get there this year. And, of course, we know what Jonathan Toews can do in the postseason, too. So don't give up on that combo. Don't give up on Brandon Saad yet, and they won't. But I'd like to see those guys, at least to start the season, back together.
You know what? The NHL is a moving train. And as it adjusts and as it progresses, you have to move with it. You can't stay stagnant. And both of these players, for me, have to get faster. And whether that means changing their training regimen, for me, it has to become more like a track athlete. You have to stay faster to stay current. For me, everything about Brandon Saad's game is definitely playing on the inside. But to do that, it's about going to the puck. Go to the puck. Whether that means going all the way across the ice to go to the puck, whether that means going to the front of the net to get to the puck, he has to go to the puck. When he stays in the perimeter, he's useless. He has to be play on the inside and going to the puck. That's what I would say to him as a teammate or as a coach. They have to say to him, come to the puck. That's all he has to worry about. If he does that, he'll end up at the front of the net. He'll end up with opportunities, and he doesn't even have to hit the mesh, because I can tell you, out of his 18 goals, only 2 of them probably hit the mesh. But that's okay. Just put the puck at the net, get to the front of the net, and pucks will go off of him. 19 has to change his training regimen. There's no question about it. He has to find a way to understand that you have to get faster, and sticking by his old ways of being stronger isn't working. He has to get faster, especially as he's going to approach into his 30s. And he also has to work on his shot, whether that means changing his stick, whether that means changing his curve, experimenting. You have a long summer to figure it out. He has to find a way to be able to score from the top of the circles. All the best players in the world have done it and can do it. Look at Nathan MacKinnon. He scores from outside the top of the circle. He's had a fantastic one-timer. He shoots through defensemen. Johnny's got to find a way to do that. You shouldn't have to beat a D one-on-one to get to the front of the net to score. You have to find a way to make them respect your shot. Right now, I don't think defenders respect his shot.
Overall, I think this team needs to get better down the middle. You know, obviously we talked about Taves and his game is not at the level we're used to seeing. The last 3 years have been trending down. But we discussed Nick Schmaltz. You know, he needs to hit the weight room this offseason. He needs to improve his one-timer. He's with one of the best passers in the NHL in Patrick Kane, who likes to set up, you know, his line mates for one-timers. And that's an area that Nick needs to improve in. And then I look at Artie Anisimov. I'm not sold on him. He's a guy I would consider moving this offseason if it was, you know, like if it was to get a top 4D or if it was to get a grittier forward that had a little more consistency to his play. So, and then I think David Camp finds suitable fourth line center, you know. Didn't talk about him a lot, and that's probably a good thing this year. But down the middle, a lot of room for improvement on this team.
Yeah, and it's funny. When you talk down the middle, this is what general managers think. They're thinking defenseman, they're thinking goaltender, and they're thinking their centerman. So, you know, we kind of touched on the defense already, and you're right. Down the middle, you know, Victor Edsel, a guy you didn't mention, I think he's going to spend a good chunk of the next year in the minors. He still has to get used to the North American game. He's a project, and I mean, you know, what a project. 6'5", you know, he's almost 220 pounds right now. He's only going to get bigger and stronger. But as far as Anisimov goes, here's another guy, you know, and if you could trade to get a top four defenseman, yeah, great. You know, you probably think about it, but he can be a very effective third line center. And what he's got to do is he's got to work on his faceoffs. I think he's got to get a little heavier. We talk about guys getting a little lighter and faster. Here's a guy I think that could use a little more weight. He's 6'4". He's only 198 pounds. He should be over 200 pounds. It would help him in the faceoff dot. It would help him in front of the net. You know, he's not going to be a speedster anyway. So, you know, play your game, but get a little heavier on the puck. Win some draws. And he's one of the few guys on the Blackhawks right now that goes to the front of the net. So, you know, good for him doing that. You know, and the other centerman, you know, you mentioned Nick Schmaltz. He's got to get better in the faceoff department. And, yes, he probably will get stronger. Another guy who, you know, can benefit from adding a little bit of bulk. I don't think it's going to affect his speed that much. But he's going to be one of the top, you know, top three centermen on a world-class team, the Chicago Blackhawks.
You look at the upper body, and you played with them, but you see the transformation that Kane had body style from 2010 to, like, say, 2015. It was really noticeable, and he's now much more difficult to knock off the puck because of the work he's put in to get stronger. And that's something like the Vinny Hinostrozas, the Nick Schmaltzes, those guys need to look over there and say, okay, then that's what I need to add to my game this offseason.
Oh, there's no question. There's room for improvement for both of those guys. And for me, Schmaltz has to dedicate himself not to playing golf every day, but to also figure out, okay, I've got to be in the gym and follow the example of his mentor in Patrick Kane and ride shotgun all the way to the bank. Yeah. If he's smart,
yeah,
and there's an opportunity for him. And
it's a big year for him.
Absolutely. This is a contract year and an opportunity for him to set himself up and really put the pressure on Stan to sign him to a long-term deal. So I'm sure he's aware of that. I'm sure he understands and is going to take advantage of that opportunity. But it does depend and predicate him on, you know, taking his game to the next level. And that means getting stronger. He certainly took strides to getting faster. You saw that all season long. His skating is unbelievable. I think if he adds some strength, it doesn't mean he has to gain weight, but if he adds some upper body strength, it's only going to help him in the faceoffs. It's only going to help him winning puck battles, which he's already great at. I don't know how many takeaways or where he ranked in the league, but he was unbelievable stick. He'll become a better penalty killer because of it as well. So he just becomes more valuable by putting on that weight and more strength and able to handle more minutes. And I also put Vinny Hinostroza in the same breath.
Yeah, we all agree that, you know, all indications are that Corey is going to be okay. I don't know how we can – I mean, I certainly don't feel confident sitting here in early April just checking the box that Corey Crawford's going to be ready to go. I think, to me, you have to go into next season saying, okay, he might be fine from the upper body, the head injury that he sustained before Christmas. But you look at the last 3 years, he's missed chunks of time. And – when you're 20 points out of the final wild card spot, you need to improve your goaltending. So, like, Stan needs to address the backup goaltending. I don't think that that was adequate this year. Because if you look, just say they got average goaltending, you know, all you needed is 10 more wins, right? If you got adequate goaltending, you probably win five more of those games. And if you got goaltending wins, you probably win a five, you know, which we were getting from Corey on a consistent basis, you'd probably get five more. So, like, it, maybe the gap is not as huge as it is as it looks right now. But the goaltending and the future of Corey is probably the biggest thing that they need to figure out this offseason.
It's always about goaltending. And you just look at, you know, who made the Stanley Cup Finals or the Stanley Cup playoffs this year, and I go to the Eastern Conference. Montreal was a number one seed. They're out of the playoffs. The Ottawa Senators were the number two seed in that Atlantic Conference. They're out of the playoffs. And you look at their goaltending. Carey Price had an off year. Craig Anderson had an off year. And so now they're not in the playoffs. So, yeah, to your point, they goaltending, it's all about goaltending. And if you look at the backup goaltender, typically, and you look on most teams, it's a 3-to-1 split. You know, your starter plays 60 games. Your backup guy gets 20 games. And unfortunately, Anton Forsberg was thrust into a situation he was not familiar with or not accustomed to. You're the number one guy. It's a different animal altogether. Just look at Scott Darling this year. They get a 925 save percentage with the Blackhawks as a backup. Although he played some more games because Corey was hurt at times last year. He failed miserably this year, and he'd be the first to tell you. So there's a different expectation on you. Now, that all being said, I think if Anton Forsberg comes back and has a 915 save percentage as a backup, that's great. I mean, he was a 908 now, so he's not that far away. You're right. They could have had five more wins because of goalie losses this year. And you don't have to steal games. If you're just playing your game, Blackhawks right now should have had five more wins. I think if they get better defensively, too, they're going to have, you know, their goaltending's obviously going to improve, whether it's the special teams make that the penalty kill, whether it's just five-on-five situations. Your D prevent more high-scoring opportunities. Your goaltender doesn't have to be quite as good. So do they have to go inside and look? I don't know that they have to do that, because if you do, it's going to cost you. If you can keep one of these guys, whether it's Forsberg or Berube, and I liked Anton Forsberg. I don't think he was used to being a number one guy, but if he can come back and make the stops he's supposed to make, end up with a 915 save percentage, and Corey's back to being Corey, I think he'll be okay between the pipes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just not as optimistic. Anton Forsberg, nine career starts before this season, one win.
Yeah.
I know he won the Calder Trophy. You are what you are. And I don't think he's the answer. I don't care how many starts, and he wasn't used to it, et cetera. I think they have to go find a backup goaltender. I'm not convinced they're in the organization or that we've seen this year. They're going to have to find a way. And that's assuming Corey Crawford is healthy and can shoulder 60, 65 games. They've got to go out and find a way to look at Antti Raanta. Mm-hmm. Played unbelievable for a bad team and earned himself a three-year contract. He proved that he can go from a backup to a starter. It can be done, but clearly the guys that I've seen this year aren't the answer.
Yeah, and they had nobody breathing down their back. You know, like, to me, it wasn't like, you know, you went out on the ice and you had to worry about Corey coming right back. I mean, you had the opportunity to take that crease over, and none of them, in my estimation, were able to do it. One other thing that they need to improve on is special teams. You know, goaltending can make up for a lot of defensive deficiencies. So can your power play and your penalty kill. And the power play was so frustrating at times this year. The lack of imagination as far as entering the zone to set up. Even having, I thought for large chunks of the season, I didn't like the personnel groupings that we saw on the ice in those power play units. So I think that's something that the coaching staff needs to reassess, reboot, and readdress this offseason.
Well, you touched on a couple of key points. You know, your power play is all about your core guys, your key players. And Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville said that our key players just weren't good enough, you know, aside from Patrick Kane. So, you know, you look at Duncan Keith, and over the first part of the season, he was the power play quarterback. He didn't get his second goal till the very end of the year.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a quarterback on your power play to end up with two goals, and he wasn't the quarterback the whole time, but he was for a good chunk, you know, that's got to change. So those guys have to be better. They got to bring somebody in who's better. And as far as the penalty kill goes, it wasn't bad. You know, up until January, I think it was mid-January, it was still in sixth spot in the NHL. Of course, without Corey Crawford, he's your best penalty killer. It's going to show, and it certainly did show. I think it showed, too, when Tommy Wingles got traded because, you know, that was in mid-February, and it really took a nosedive from about that point on. So, you know, do they get Tommy Wingles back? We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, as far as the special teams go, listen, we've talked about it a number of times. The NHL is a 3-2 league. Typically, the winning team has three goals. The losing team has two goals. That's not a lot of goals. And if you can win on the power play, or win on your special teams and your goalie plays better than their goalie, that's going to win you a lot of hockey games. So that is certainly an area the Blackhawks have to work on, and I agree. You know, gaining the zone. You know, you can't just dump it in anymore and hope to get it back. You've got to make the opposition zone with speed, and your passes, once you're inside the blue line, have to be good. Unfortunately, a lot of times this year, they weren't.
You know, Joel talks about predictability a lot with his team, and for me, the power play was the least predictable. I had no idea what they were going to do on the entry. There was no predictability in their play. For me, there's two areas of huge concern was the entries, and they didn't run any set plays off of faceoffs when they won the draw. For me, if you clean up those two areas, the entries are clean, the confidence grows in those players. They get the entry that they wanted. If they start with the puck on the other side, if they start with the puck on a one faceoff and they run a set play, force them to run one of three plays and you get pucks to the net. Now as a penalty killer, you're nervous, you're on edge. You know that they will shoot the puck. Now you're a little bit more concerned. If you just keep the puck on the outside, you make it easy. For me on the PK side of things, teams figured them out. They're way too aggressive. As the season went along, they were a little bit out of sorts. The forwards were too high, not protecting seams behind them. Everyone was going, yeah, and it didn't work. Teams started to realize, okay, I can bypass the half wall guy, get it down low, get them running around. They'll chase us. We'll create seams. We'll get pucks to the net and beat them to the front of the net. And that's exactly what happened. They've got to get back to understanding when the right time the pressure is and get committed, recommitted again to blocking shots because nobody was committed to doing that.
Yeah, and one more thing on that power play entry thing, just an observation going to practices. They tend to practice it with the puck already in the zone and everybody already set up. I didn't see them practice the entries on a regular basis. So that's something that, you know, seems to be a simple fix. All right, last thing. Patrick Kane's going to the World Championships. Alex DeBrincat's going to the World Championships. There's other guys going, but Jonathan Toews is not, Saad is not. Does it surprise you that, you know, arguably the two best offensive players on the team are still going for more and trying to take their game to another level on the world stage, and some guys that struggled this year have decided that the World Championships is not the best spot for them?
You know, I read an article, and it wasn't too long ago, about Patrick Kane saying that, you know, you can learn a lot over there and you can get better. And this is what's going to happen. Soon as all the Americans who aren't involved in the playoffs realize that Patrick Kane's going, they're going to want to be a part of that. Because I think Team USA's got a really good chance to win a World Championship. It's going to be over in Denmark. I think Nick Schmaltz should probably be on that team. You get DeBrincat, Kane. You watch how many guys are going to line up as soon as they find out that Patrick Kane wants to be a part of Team USA. I think it's going to be an unbelievable experience for anyone who jumps on board to that. And if Nick Schmaltz has an opportunity, I would heavily guide him, influence him to jump at it, because it's going to be a learning experience. I think Team USA is probably going to win it, and it's only going to make them better as players.
I'm surprised Saad is not going. If he was invited, I think he should go. I think he needs to have a good feeling going into the summer, and this is an opportunity for him to create that good feeling and an opportunity to experience something different and improve his game. I give Jonathan Toews a pass because he's injured and finished the season injured, and obviously probably not smart for him to go over there and play. But I'm not surprised in the least that Patrick Kane's going. This guy loves hockey nobody's business, and always starving. There's no complacency in his game. He's continuing to want to find ways to get better. I'm amazed and I'm excited for next year to figure out what is he going to possibly improve on. But he'll find something.
And hopefully other guys will see that and say, this guy's the best guy on our team. He's a top five player in the league, and he's still trying to get better each and every year. Just to put a bow on Team USA, Connor Murphy's also going to play for Team USA. So it's Kane, DeBrincat, and Murphy for now. Schmaltz is considering it. Mm. Boys, nice job. We will talk to you throughout the summer. When things are warranted, we'll have a podcast pretty much every single week. Thanks for joining us on this week's Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by our Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. For Steve Conroy, Jamal Mayers, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening, everybody, and go Hawks.